by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are grass make the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Got a lot going this week. Roger Stone was finally treated right, and President Trump commuted his sentence. And this will take a lot of pressure off of Roger. And that trial judge mistreated him, was way, way off the base. And I'll have another little comment to make before we we'll play this little clip here of some opinions by some of the Fox commentators.
It's the other side that are criminals, including Biden and Obama, who spied on my campaign and got caught. Your reaction, Corey.
Look, I think Roger Stone was treated very unfairly. They used more men to go and get Roger Stone than I think they used on the Osama bin Laden raid. And it just so happened that one of the networks was there to watch the whole thing. Look, Roger Stone was clearly targeted by an unfair prosecution. Look, I'm not the biggest fan of Roger Stone. I think you guys know that. But the way he was treated by this government should scare the hell out of every American, that they can do that to people. You know, they could do it to anybody. What they've done to Mike Flynn and Roger Stone. This president saw an injustice. He commuted the sentence, which is the right thing to do to make sure Roger has a fair trial and has a fair hearing. It's very important in our system. Comey, Brennan, Clapper, McCabe, all the names we know have never been brought to justice. It's time justice is blind, but those people need to be held accountable.
Corey, is there some hypocrisy perhaps at play? All Democrats in Washington, many of them criticizing this commutation. But when we looked into the history book, President Obama issued 1,715 commutations, the most of any president in U.S. history, in pretty much about the last dozen or so combined presidents. More than 500 of those commutations were for life sentences. Doesn't seem that there was as much criticism then.
Hey, Griff, there's nothing to see here. If Obama did it, it must be fine. When Trump does it, it's wrong. That's the Trump derangement syndrome that the media and the left has had since he came down that big, beautiful golden escalator.
It was obvious that he was mistreated during this trial. And the trial judge was totally unfair and made rulings that were obviously unfair to Roger Stone. And so they're part of all the inside, you know what I mean, deep state. And they're just working on behalf of Hillary and all these other people. So it gets to be really, really discouraging. Now here's Mark Morgan comes up, and he's a commissioner out in the Portland area. And he has some very, very derogatory things about what went on in Portland, Oregon. Here we go with an interview from Mark Morgan. Here we go now.
All right, violence rocking Portland overnight. Police declaring a riot yet again as the city sees its 38th straight day of unrest. Border Patrol now called in to assist. Here with an update is Acting CBP Commissioner Mark Morgan. Good morning, Mr. Commissioner. The third time this week you've had to declare a riot in Portland. What's going on there?
Well, I'll tell you, Griffin, these are not protesters. These are criminals who got together and organized and planned and actually brought weapons. They brought shields. They brought frozen water bottles, rocks, lasers, weapons with the intent to destroy a federal building and harm law enforcement officers. And I've said it before, I don't care what your ideological beliefs are, your political affiliation. Violence, we should all be united, is wrong. And I can tell you, for one, I'm glad that this president of the United States understands the importance of law and order, and that it's a cornerstone of American society. What we saw in Portland last night was criminal, and we stood strong with our federal partners to resist that.
Mr. Commissioner, the president's warned that this element, there are parts of these groups that are terrorists, perhaps, that they're literally trying to do pure harm. This isn't about making a statement. You have some news you can share with us now about the arrest on Friday and the attack on the Hatfield Federal Courthouse. What is that?
Absolutely, Griff. Early this morning, in fact, I just got this situation report a few minutes ago, is that one of the criminals that were actually trying to assault one of the CBP employees while he was being arrested, the report right now is telling us that a pipe bomb, a fused incendiary device, and a machete was actually discovered during that search. Think about that, Griff. Think about the deadly consequences from these criminal actions. And also, I hope your listeners get out there and see some video. There's a video where a woman is overheard confronting one of the agents there, and she refers to it as, hey, I know this game. I'm on a city sidewalk. There's nothing that you can do. And she goes further and says, why don't you go back where you came from, white boy? That's what this is, Griff. It's a game to them. It's a deadly game, but serious. This is about law and order. We must be united. Where are the local political leaders, Griff, standing up saying, this is unconscionable, this is wrong, and these individuals should cease and desist and be arrested? Where are they?
Your officers on the ground, this is quite troubling that a pipe bomb allegedly was found along with the incendiary device and a machete. So what will happen now with that individuals and those that you're arresting there in Portland?
Well, absolutely, Griffin. That's what we say. This really is a whole of government approach. So we have United States Marshals, Federal Protective Service there, ICE, HSI sent agents there, and the FBI has committed a lot of resources to making sure that these individuals are arrested and prosecuted to the full extent of the law for the criminals that they are. We are doing disservice to peaceful, lawful protesters when we call these individual protesters. They're not. They're criminal thugs with an agenda.
In the last, just with 30 seconds to go, Mr. Commissioner, do you see this being now you'll have to escalate the force that you're already deploying?
Look, we're going to escalate to the use of force that's needed to repel these criminals and apprehend them and prosecute them. But I can tell you, I've been doing this for over 25 years, and this president is 100% behind us, and I'm glad that we have an administration that understands the importance of law and order. We're not walking away from our federal facilities like police departments have in some communities. We're staying.
Mr. Commissioner, thanks for being here. Mark Morgan, Acting Commissioner of the CBP, thank you to your men and women who worked over this fourth holiday. Thank you, sir.
We're up against a Marxist communist revolutionary group. Some are coming in from Somalia, like Ilhan Omar, which got a little clip about what she says about throwing over everything. I mean, she wants to just change out everything here. And so this is very dangerous talk. And we've got to be very, very careful about going after these people. We can't let this slide. But here's Ilhan Omar. She's a representative out of Minneapolis, U.S. representative. Here we go now.
As long as our economy and political systems prioritize profit without considering who is profiting, who is being shut out, we will perpetuate this inequality. So we cannot stop at criminal justice system. We must begin the work of dismantling the whole system of oppression wherever we find it.
By the way, Somalia was the hub of African slavery for over 2,000 years, being sold around the Middle East and what's Europe today, Central Europe, the Romans, all of that. I mean, basically, her ancestors invented slavery, I mean, in that area, okay? She comes here running from it, sucks millions off everybody, and then bitches and complains. But listen, step aside, ladies and gentlemen.
We are fighting for far more than this tax. We are preparing the ground for a different kind of society. And if you, Jeff Bezos, want to drive that process forward by lashing out against us in our modest demands, then so be it. Because we are coming for you and your rotten system. We are coming to dismantle this deeply oppressive, racist, sexist, violent, utterly bankrupt system of capitalism, this police state. We cannot and will not stop until we overthrow it and replace it with a world based instead on solidarity, genuine democracy, and equality. A socialist world. Thank you.
A socialist world. Really, it's a communist world. And really, the minute the commies take over, no more free stuff, no more welfare. You get put in a work brigade. And if you run your mouth, they shoot you in the back of the head.
This whole system, Alex made some good comments there. This whole system is being brought about by the corporate fascist system that has been building all throughout the 20th century into the 21st century. And these were giant corporations. They came out of foundations that were set up by Rockefeller and others. Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, and so forth. And these were all, you know, they had these high-minded ideas about what, how they were going to help America, see. But what happened later on was a series of corporate fascism. And some of these leaders, and the rise, during the rise of FDR into office and into much more of a socialist, almost communist state, Alger Hiss was, has been proven to be part of the communist system, even though he denied it the whole time. He actually lived for a while inside the White House with FDR. So Alger Hiss was uncovered by the Venona intercepts in the 50s. That late part, actually in the 40s, when it started about 47, 1947, the Army Security Agency began to intercept certain communications between the KGB and agents in America. And they were focusing in on the time there of Russia was trying to steal our hydrogen bomb secrets, which we were just developing out in New Mexico. And so they uncovered the spy ring in New York City, which actually eventually was uncovered to be identified to be the Rosenberg spy network up there. And so these spies that were working in our government and outside of our government were beginning to be surveilled by the Army Security Agency, and some of their communications were broken, and they began to identify who they were, see. But what came in opposition to that earlier in the 30s was even a system of corporate fascists that were going to take out anyone like a socialist or communist element and actually dominate with a fascist system. This was when they were friendly with Mussolini and Hitler on their rise to power in those two countries of Italy and Germany. We must realize that fascism had two major characteristics. One is that the individual must submit to the dominance of the state and must sacrifice for the state. The other thing that was operative in both Italy and Germany was the corporations were left intact, but they were in partnership, became partners with the government. Of course, in some cases, like in Hitler's government, the government became more dominant than the corporate structure. But in Italy, the corporate structure was always dominant too. But anyway, these are some of the characteristics of what we're up against. So if you look at the Tides Foundation, which was created in San Francisco in the 70s by Pike and others, then you'll see that eventually corporate monies had been diverted from the Tides Foundation in through certain organizations such as the Alliance for Global Justice out of Tucson to many revolutionary groups. The corporate fascists want to bring about world communism and communism for America as a control mechanism. It's easier to control the lower classes through communism than there would be some democratic republic. So they're behind the corporate fascists operating all over the world with real giant corporations are behind the world communist movement. And this is what's so upsetting at times, is to try to get a handle on this and try to explain this to people who don't really understand quite exactly what's going on. And I'm going to play next an interview that David Knight had this last week with Catherine Austin Fitz. And the two of them speaking together flesh out some of the mechanisms and the, you know what I mean, intellectual control and so forth of AI, artificial intelligence, how that's being used and how this surveillance stuff. But anyway, I listened to this conversation between Catherine Austin Fitz and David Knight. They have some really insightful, important things to say. Here we go now.
Joining us now is Catherine Austin Fitz. You can find her website, Solari.com. Also on Twitter, you can find her at The Solari Report. The Solari Report on Twitter. Joining us now is Catherine Austin Fitz. Thank you for joining us, Catherine.
David, always a pleasure. How are you?
Oh, doing great, I guess. Kind of depressed as usual as I look at this rolling out, but it looks like all the pieces are falling into place for their side, doesn't it?
I used to have a pastor would say, if we can face it, God can fix it.
That's
so
right.
I think the depression of facing what's going on is sort of part of what it takes to get to the other side. So I
That's
continue
true.
To be an optimist.
Every day, as I was saying to Pastor Waddell in the last hour, I said every day it's a question, do you trust God and what do you fear? I mean, if you look
right.
at this,
exactly.
quite frankly, you and I both know that the odds are, I mean, these people, the power that they've got, the plans that they've had for a long time, and to watch how all this stuff is just falling into place and how rapidly it is falling into place, I would have absolutely no hope if I didn't have hope in God. But God is bigger than all of this, and we'll just see what happens.
I think they're absolutely going to fail and fail spectacularly. Now, what I don't underestimate is their ability to kill a lot of people on their way to failure. Because I think, I call this the injection fraud. I have a very popular article called The Injection Fraud, and I don't call these vaccines. I don't think they're vaccines. Under the law, vaccines are medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And these are, these are tracking devices. These are injectable credit cards. This mm-hmm. is part of the global reset. So the bankers got together at Jackson Hole last August, and they approved a plan called Going Direct. And Going Direct means they can build this market train track. The last mile is into your home and your neighborhood, and then the last inch is into your brain. And that's why they keep trying to shoot heavy metals into all of us.
Yeah.
And so I think this is part of getting a much more centralized, immediate control in the financial system direct into every human being. So this, in one sense, this is the mark of the beast. Any Christian knows what this is.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but
absolutely.
I don't call these vaccines. I think it's a fraud to call them vaccines. So, under
and you're
the
not
law,
the only one. I've gotten a lot of people contact me and say, I've got a relative who's a doctor or a nurse or whatever, and they're not anti-vaccine, but boy, they're really anti this COVID-19 thing because they know it's not going to be tracked. And if you look at the company that is being fast tracked the most, that is the lead, and of course, our vaccine czar, Moncef Slaoui, comes from Moderna, but that company has never produced anything that has ever gone to market, and no product, no medicine or anything, and they're the lead ones with the vaccine, and most of the other big pharmaceutical companies don't even want to try that approach of mode RNA.
So here's why they call it a vaccine. If you can pretend under the law that it's medicine, then you have freedom from liability and you can get all sorts of government money and protection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's a fraud to call it a vaccine. But if you look at the profits of being able to get people to call it a vaccine are, it increases your profits by many hundreds of billions of dollars. And of course, protection from liability in a situation where you're going to injure, disable, or kill a lot of people is absolutely essential to any kind of plan that does that kind of human harm. So, and that's why I think it's very, very important that we not permit them to call them vaccines, because this is not a medicine. This is something else.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and again, of course, that liability protection goes back to the first year that Fauci was in office. He helped to get that through back in. He came in 1985. By 1986, they signed that law. And as you pointed out, if these people were going to go out and they were going to use something like, maybe hydroxychloroquine, which has been around for 60 years and costs about $1 a dose, right? We're not going to allow that. But we'll give people $500 million each to develop a vaccine, and then we'll spend billions of dollars from all these other companies and use the military to ramp ramp up production of this, and nobody, not only will you get $500 million, but you'll get complete legal immunity if you call it a vaccine.
Well, but here's the thing. You're trying to re-engineer the financial system. So this has nothing to do with health. You're mm-hmm. trying to create central control by creating by invoking a medical emergency or a healthcare emergency that gives you all sorts of police power. So this is, you know, the war on terror has run its course, and now we need a new way of evoking central powers and police powers. And that's part of what this does. But the reality is, if you're going to build the smart grid into everybody's body and hook us up to the government cloud, you know, you need a pretext, and this is the pretext. And it's one of the reasons they're moving so fast. Normally, yes. if this had been a vaccine, you know, it would take years to do the proper testing and trials. And this is a giant experiment. And the reason I say it's going to kill a lot of people or disable a lot of people is they haven't done any of that. So this is highly experimental, but they're in a rush because mm-hmm. last August they approved the global reset. They're proceeding. And they need to get every human being in their plan hooked up to the cloud.
Let's talk about the financial aspect of this when we come back, because that's one of your big areas of expertise. We're talking to Catherine Austin Fitz, Solari.com, and you can find her on Twitter at The Solari Report. We'll be right back. Stay with us. All right, welcome back. We're talking to Catherine Austin Fitz. I want to say real quickly before we go back to Catherine. All right, going back to Catherine. Catherine, we were talking about where this is all headed, the tracing, the tracking, essentially putting everybody onto the internet, that moving towards digital cash. I mentioned earlier in the program how we have the LEAD Act that has now been proposed in the U.S. government to outlaw encryption. So if you all thought that cryptocurrency was going to be your ticket to privacy, well, you better think again, because they are going to outlaw every aspect of privacy. But it's also the contact tracing, isn't it?
So, this is essentially, if you want to step back, this is a conversion of the model under which society is managed. And it's mm-hmm. a conversion of the financial model, but it's also a major conversion of the legal and governance model, David. So, you know, so you and I grew up in a world where an individual was sovereign. Mm-hmm. So an individual had sovereignty, and essentially that sovereignty was granted by divine authority. Mm-hmm. And what you're looking at is a push to technocracy, whereby an individual has no sovereignty. They are a resource to be used just like a gallon of oil or, you know, a bushel of wheat.
Yeah.
So they're viewed as a resource. And instead of having them, resonate with divine authority and all intelligence, you want them to resonate with their smartphone and the machine. So this is essentially going back to a very, you know, part of the going direct model is you're going to hook people up. And instead of using markets to manage the allocation of resources, you're going to use AI software in a technocracy. So you set highly centralized rules, by algorithm. And then mm-hmm. you proceed to, allocate resources and manage and control people very, very directly with tremendous amounts of micromanagement. And at the heart of it, it's essentially a slavery system where you no longer have currency in the classic sense. You know, everybody gets a credit at the company store, and if they behave, they get to use the credit. If they don't, you know, the credit gets taken away.
That's right. Well, so, they love to talk about the Internet of Things, don't they? You know, where they inventory everything. And we've seen this in the warehouses. You know, they have RFID or other things where they can keep track of every piece of thing in their inventory. But guess what? We are one of those things that they're going to inventory. We are the part of the Internet of Things. That includes us in their world of smart cities and tracking and everything that we do and tracing everything that we do.
So think of it this way, for us to run a train from one coast to the other, you have to have train tracks. And what you're looking at is an accelerated and very aggressive basis to get the train tracks of the smart grid, the hardware, into the last mile and the last inch. And the last mile is getting it into your home and your community, the telecommunications, et cetera. And the last inch is basically getting the brain-machine interface. One of the things I wanted to mention You mentioned that the gentleman who runs Operation Warp Speed, which is the COVID injection effort by the federal government. I don't know if you know this. Yes, he was on the board of Moderna, but he was also head of of research at GlaxoSmithKline.
That's right. And yeah, for the longest time, of vaccines there,
His claim to fame was brain-machine interface and bioelectronics.
Oh, okay. Moncef Slaoui?
Right. And there's a 2012 article on Financial Times with detailed descriptions of his leadership in the brain-machine interface area and what brain-machine interface can do. You notice they're always trying to do the test, and now the vaccine's into your head. You ever wonder why?
Well, I had not seen him identified by that. I had seen him identified as a vaccine guy at GlaxoSmithKline. But that makes absolute sense, Catherine, because, you know, Francis Collins – has been talking about, and, you know, the boss of Fauci, after he did the Human Genome Project, there was a long article about a week and a half ago where they were talking about transhumanism. And as soon as Francis Collins went from the Human Genome Project to be the manager of the NIH, he began the Human Connectome Project, where he's basically doing brain analysis and how you communicate by brain, because that's going to be part of, they imagine, their transhumanism. So, yeah, it always goes back to getting in your brain.
Right. Well, part of selling, you know, by taking the way I started to learn about what I call the injection fraud is, for 10 years I served as an investment advisor to private families and individuals. And many of my clients had had children disabled or killed by vaccines. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started to add up the financial destruction that can occur to a family, even a very wealthy family, from vaccine injury. And it was absolutely frightening. In fact, I just saw, I don't know if you've seen recent interviews with Toby Rogers, but he's saying the cost by 2025, the cost of autism to the United States will be in the trillions of dollars. It's very frightening. You know, there's a great mother on the first vaxxed. You know, Vaxxed and Vaxxed 2 are really must-watch documentaries. But she explained that a heavily autistic child will cost, from the time he becomes autistic to his death, present value $5 million. Rogers had a lower number for that, but I think the $5 million, from what I saw, was very reasonable. You know, that's the kind of expense that destroys the economics of a family.
And it was completely unknown. You and I never saw that. I mean, the first time I ever knew a kid that had autism was in the mid-2000s. Prior to that, never seen it before. Nobody wants to ask why this is all of a sudden exploding. And when you have somebody who does ask, like Dr. Andrew Wakefield, they come after him. By the way, he has a documentary. I'm going to watch that this weekend at 1986theact.com. It's a dramatization going back and looking at how they got legal immunity and the whole vaccine issue. So I'm anxious to see that. But, yeah, you're absolutely right.
There are two things. There's a PrEP Act in 2005 and the 1986 Act, and it's the combination. If you go to Solari and read the injection fraud, I describe them both. Mm-hmm. And it's the combination of those that gives them tremendous liability. We now have 54% of the kids in America now have chronic disease. And the doctors I trust tell me it's much higher because a lot of the kids can't afford proper testing. So whether it's 54% or 70 to 75%, you're talking about significant depopulation. You're talking about wiping out a population. I call it the great poisoning, and I think vaccines are only a part of it. If you look at whether it's the global spraying or you look at the GMOs or you're looking at the pesticides, I mean, we have, you know, several generations which are literally being physically poisoned. And we can give all sorts of names to the symptoms of poisoning, but that makes it complicated. It's really very simple. You know, we're poisoning each other, and that has to change.
Yeah, and it's a soft kill. And they're doing that. They're killing our economy. I'm just surprised at how rapidly it is accelerating now at this point. And they're getting ready. I mean, they've got billions of these things being manufactured. They're ready to push these things out just by the end of the year to accelerate the damage to people.
But you can't just say they are doing this, because we are doing this too. If you look at the number of people who are implementing, you know, whether it's the pharmaceutical part or the government part or the academic part or the science part or the, you know, you go on and on and on and on. What you're watching is all of us are helping to implement this. And we, that means if we can face the fact that we're culpable too, we have the power to stop it.
That's right. And they are able to continue with this and get us to play along with this because they play on our fear. They play on our ignorance. They play on the greed of many people. All of those things roll together, and it makes a very, very powerful combination. All right, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Catherine Austin Fitz, Solari.com, and you can also find her on Twitter at The Solari Report. And what was the name again, Catherine, of that article about the injection fraud? Was
it injection fraud?
Injection fraud at Solari.com.
This is another insightful interview that Robert Barnes had with Alex Jones. They sat down and were talking about the social network, the big ones, Google and Twitter, and Facebook and so forth, and how they're going to interact. How is Trump going to gain control over them? What's important about what's going on right now is that ADL is putting pressure on the major corporation to pull, okay, to boycott Facebook with their advertising. And they're saying to these large corporate interests that Facebook is not using enough censorship to take out the conservative, right-wing sort of, expressions and, sites on the Facebook site. Now, what we see, is a really problem in Facebook having taken out too many already. And so we see an over-censoring of the, patriot and conservative groups on Facebook at this time. But here's a very, very insightful interview between Alex and Robert Barnes, and both are just brilliant in their analysis.
In an impartial way, with constitutional lawyer Robert Barnes, I want to ask the question, is Trump really going after big tech? Does he have a chance? What are the issues involved? Separate from what we want to happen, what is the reality of the key players that are involved?
Well, really, if you go back about a year ago, Trump started signaling with rhetoric that he was going to go down this path. And I think his hope and objective was that his threats to do something. Remember, he met secretly with Jack Dorsey around this time. He announced the big tech conference about complaints during this time. The meetings leaked about the attorney general meeting with state attorney generals to take action concerning big tech. And at the time, we talked about it, that this was likely rhetorical at this stage to try to induce big tech to play ball. But what happened is big tech escalated instead. Rather than de-escalating, they escalated. So what Trump is communicating is that he's going to reciprocate big tech's escalation. As they escalate, so will he. And now he's escalated to the point where he's like, well, now I'm going to go after points of real vulnerability. Your connection to the Chi-Coms, your complicity with Chinese communists blackmailing and blacklisting and blackballing people in China, illicit surveillance, illicit control, and your illicit influence in U.S. elections, your illicit lies to the public under the federal trade and communication and state consumer protection laws. So this is an escalation. What we can anticipate is that big tech has not learned their lesson. They're sort of deaf in response to these risks and threats. So all they're going to do is they're going to escalate like they did today.
Which they've done. So speak to that.
So what's next is the president's going to have to reciprocate in that escalation. That means there has to be meaningful action taken. The same kind of action that took place with big tobacco needs to start taking place with big tech. He will likely parallel what they did. So just like they're going to look at what happened in the Microsoft case, that will preview for you. And when the DOJ went after them on antitrust principles, what's going to start happening on the antitrust on the context and the front lines against big tech? Look at what happened against big tobacco. It is a preview. It is a preamble. It is a prologue to what is going to happen with the president. It's going to use the same big tobacco techniques against big tech using state attorney generals and state statutes that are broader and more powerful in politically favorable environments and climates to go after big tech in the arena of consumer protection, where they have monopolized their public part of the public square by public deceit to the public to get the monetary.
And isn't their over-arrogance going to be their weakness?
Yeah, there's no question. If they were smart and savvy, they would already have stepped back from the brink. Instead, they keep getting closer and closer and closer to the edge because they are so unaccustomed to facing any meaningful consequence for any of their actions that they don't believe anything will happen. They believe there's somebody that as long as they get more aggressive and more bullying behavior, nobody will push back against their bullying behavior. They don't understand that's what Trump does best is fight bullies. And so the Trump will continue to push up as they push up. And in the end, he still has the power of the Justice Department, the power of the state attorney generals, the power of the law, the power of the public persuasion.
Well, they're hoping in 150 days he's out.
Correct. Now, that's the next, is the secondary, part of the reason why they're responding the way they do is because they're so arrogant. They don't believe they'll ever be held responsible. But the other parallel part of it is they think all they need is to buy time, buy 4 or 5 more months, get Trump defeated. That's why they're leaking to the press and to the public that they're forming all these secret PACs, all these secret political organizations. They're disclosing their role in it, that they're funneling funds to it. They're funneling their big tech resources to it to try to manipulate the election. They tried it on a micro scale and select congressional races in 2018, and it worked extraordinarily. A lot of House races had unusual results that could not be explained either by money or local demographics or comparable political voting trends in other parts of the country. So they believe they can replicate that, duplicate that, and defeat
the. So what's the headline? Big Tech believes they can duplicate congressional fraud?
Yes, Big Tech believes they can run elections. Big Tech believes they can have a Chinese-style outcome to U.S. elections in 2020. That's what they believe. And the only way to push back against that, to prevent that, is the president escalating legal
and political. That's the next question. How does Trump checkmate the takeover of the 2020 election?
Trump has to continue to use all powers of the executive branch and all the legal remedies available to him, and at the same time parallel that with public persuasion efforts so that the public is fully informed and cognizant of it, and start to use his own individual power or platform by deplatforming Twitter and replatforming or increasing the platforming of independent groups like Parler and Gab and Telegram and others. Be able to push back using these alternative technologies, locals.com. The president can do things to help monetize the economic competitors, the free speech competitors to Twitter and Facebook.
So he can knight the alternatives.
Absolutely. He can help create his own app store. I mean, he's in a position to be able to use his public name.
And his name will create a franchise.
Exactly. Do for big tech what he did to high-end real estate.
It isn't like it takes 20 years to grow now. Right now is a zeitgeist. Things will grow in 1 year. It takes 100.
Yeah, exactly. And he's in a unique position, a singular position to make a singular difference. He is the equivalent of a Thomas Jefferson or George Washington to the Revolutionary era. He can do the same thing now. He just has to continue on the path of taking action and not listen to anyone that says, "Don't worry, step back."
What is the path of action?
The first path.
We're going to call this Trump's path of action.
The path of action part one is to be able to continue to take legal remedies in all arenas, civil, criminal, and in the public persuasion space. Secondly, he should
call the public to mobilize.
Exactly. Continue to persuade the public and use the power of his platform to monetize independent free speech competitors and to educate and activate his base to support those free speech competitors and to recognize the risks that big tech continues to pose in their undue influence the 2020 election season. And then third, last but not least, there's really a parallel to this. If he would go about pardoning not only Roger Stone and General Flynn, but also people like Julian Assange and Ed Snowden, he would send a broader, louder message to the complicit Chi-Com big tech relationship with the intel agencies trying to facilitate a transfer of power from the United States to China to undermine their big tech-related agenda in that space and that political, economic, social, cultural space to help bring back American power and send the signal that he's going to maintain independent actors in that arena. And that's how he can do it. He can take a threefold approach that can meaningfully impact the ability of big tech to manipulate and control elections in our public dialogue moving forward.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how's Trump doing right now?
Right now he's at about a 7, and so the fix to a 7. But he can continue to use a lot more powers of the presidential branch, a lot more powers of...
Plus, they're going to destroy him, so he might as well go away.
Absolutely. He's realizing he's had to escalate now because I think he was surprised. He's a guy who thinks that if he sits down in a room that people... He's sort of like Joe Rogan. He thinks the people on the opposite side are operating from a position of good faith rather than a position of bad faith. He's had to be educated by actual experience in recognizing their motivations are bad faith, not good faith. They cannot be trusted. They can only be disciplined. That's the only way to get remedy to protect the American democracy that is at a very distinct space at a very time of risk for the future.
Let's talk about this. If Trump fails, it'll be all right because they've already been devastated so bad. Next phase, how's that happen?
Trump needs to succeed. If Trump fails, then the experiment of the American democracy is at serious jeopardy to a degree it's never been in American political or legal history. If he fails, at least put into motion those steps taken by local state attorney generals who don't depend on the presidential power, educate the local populace so that they're aware.
I agree, Robert. I want Trump to succeed, but even if he does it, the fight's on.
Yeah, exactly. Then under any circumstance, he has put into position the tools by which we can effectively resist the big tech monopoly of political and cultural and economic life that big tech is trying to impose on the rest of us.
Do you think the establishment realizes how much trouble they're in?
I think the establishment always goes back and forth. I think big tech does not understand that they've been the bully on the playground, uncontested, unchallenged for decades now. They've never, because they had legal immunity from the get-go, they've never faced a bad jury outcome. They've never faced a bad judicial outcome. They've never even really faced a bad public opinion outcome, and particularly in the areas of public opinion that they most care about. So big tech hasn't faced meaningful economic competition because they've been able to effectively monopolize the circumstance and situation. So in order to effectively push back, big tech's going to have to get meaningfully disciplined and suffer real consequences before they appreciate the scope and scale of the risk that the president's able to impose upon them.
What's your advice to President Trump?
Continue on the same path and escalate. Whenever the big tech escalates, re-escalate right back, because that's the only message they get. Certain people only understand a certain kind of discipline. And the big tech needs to realize their bullying tactics and techniques will not work, that they will suffer for it economically, suffer for it culturally, suffer for it politically in that space by using every tool he has available to him, his unique brand, his public platform, and the powers of the presidency. Combine all three to continue to educate big tech that they will not be big brother moving forward in the United States of America.
So, this late 2020, what would you call the different sides of the players?
The key participants you have is with big tech. You have big tech, which has its own interest involved. You have the political actors who favor a sort of big tech China alliance with a Chinese social credit model system moving forward. The control freaks like Bill Gates, George Soros, other people who have a very distinct political agenda, social agenda, to which they want to leverage big tech to facilitate the development and the success of that control-driven Chinese social credit kind of system model of power and authority, sort of authoritarian economics, politics, culture, and society. And they are aligned with Democratic partisans and those who want to take out the president. So the political establishment has all of those on one side, which includes the press, includes large parts of the legal academy, includes large parts of power within throughout what you would call the deep state, the administrative state.
Why does that press never give up? They just always attack.
Because the same mindset. You have a bunch of millennials. The press is dominated in terms of its staffing by a bunch of millennials. When you look at the White House press conference, it's millennials who grew up in a safe space culture, who believe that the other side's not supposed to be heard. You're supposed to suppress any dissident voice.
They just attack all day and everything.
Absolutely. And they're used to winning. And then they don't understand what it's like when someone else is allowed to be heard? Someone else is allowed to join playtime? No, it's supposed to be a set play date with their little safe space with everything arranged and structured and scheduled to meet the little Karen's agenda for the day. And when that reality doesn't happen, they don't even know how to deal with it except to scream about it. And so that's why you get these primal screams from this sort of millennial social culture that knows no other way of reaction. And they just react with outrage. You know, go ban them, stop them, censor them, prevent them, prohibit them, do bad things to them, punish them, engage in lawfare against them. Same universal mindset because they don't understand what the real world is like because they haven't lived in it. They've lived in a safe space culture built on the kidnapping hoaxes of the late 1980s from the time they're
so
5 years old.
So what do we call this transmission?
The key to freedom for a free America depends on a free public square, and the only person protecting that free public square right now is President Trump.
So Trump is freedom's defender.
Absolutely. Trump is today's Thomas Paine. Trump is today's Paul Revere. And he needs the rest of America to heed the call to make that a call effective.
I got a short-term question. looking at that executive order, it talks about limiting funding from the government on these social media platforms that engage in censorship. Is that going to hurt him in the long term? Is that going to hurt the Democrats more in the long term or short term even leading up to the election? What are the ramifications?
There's a lot of government funding that takes place at big tech and really only touched the very tip of the iceberg. So the president said no more marketing expenses to be – no more marketing budgets to be given to big tech until they comply with these free speech standards. But he can go much further than that. Big tech receives far more money in a wide range of defense-related contracts, other forms of contracts, other forms of relationships.
And they're in bed with the Shycoms.
Exactly. And
I think the espionage angle is where they go.
Ultimately, that's the ultimate threat for individually is their complicity. You know, you can go with the most effective civil strategy involves consumer protection and big tech's lies to the public. The most effective strategy ultimately for individual accountability is the criminal espionage and criminal sabotage that has effectively taken place with big tech enabling the Chinese authoritarianism to succeed not only in China but increasingly in the United States. As YouTube just got caught doing, they were suppressing any dissident speech that questioned the Chinese Communist Party. They claim it was an accident. Well, the only way that accident could have happened is somebody deliberately put that language into an algorithm to track and trace it because they were suppressing it within minutes of someone voicing such opinions in a dissident video. So they're now acting as the Chinese social credit, Chinese propaganda in the United States to manipulate information provided to the American public about a foreign government.
The Chinese are very dangerous in what's going on at this time, and we've just got to break relationships with them and try to rebuild our industrial base. And I don't know if it's possible or not, but that's what that's the path we need to pursue. Next is Lou Dobbs with John Solomon, and boy, they have some important things to say. Here we go now.
We're joined now by John Solomon, award-winning investigative reporter, editor-in-chief of Just the News. John, great to have you with us.
I've got to start
with John Durham. Yeah. You and I have talked about this. This show has been pointing out that this judiciary, this Justice Department is slow rolling the American people. It isn't just the radical Dems on Capitol Hill. Yeah. This is a major act, in my judgment, of treason. And I mean not in a legal sense, but they're betraying the damn country. And it's nothing less than that. The idea, as they floated out today, that John Durham would not have an investigation ready by the end of the summer, as the Attorney General himself suggested strongly that they would do, it now may fall to after the election. That is criminal. That is just criminal, in my opinion. I want to hear yours.
Yeah, listen, I've seen a lot of activity over the last 3 or 4 months showing that they're building a criminal case. I think there's going to be a split the baby sort of solution here, and that is that there may be some actions around Labor Day, a handful of indictments or a plea bargain that comes out that begins to tell the story. But there is a little bit of a rope-a-dope going on. The case has slowed down a little bit, and I think they're sending flares that this is going to carry in past the election. I still think, based on the evidence I'm seeing, the actual activity, witnesses being interviewed, talk, documents being changing hands, that there is still the possibility of some indictment, some criminal action in September. And, you know, some of the excuses we hear don't make sense. We hear, all right, there was COVID, there aren't grand juries. Well, a grand jury was able to indict Ghislaine Maxwell in New York just last week. It can't be that hard to get this done. And certainly, Lord knows, the evidence is standing in public. The case has already been made in public.
Well, I mean, what we're really hearing from this Attorney General and this Justice Department is that this isn't a priority to know who tried to overthrow the President of the United States, to hold accountable Justice Department officials, intelligence community officials, and department and agency leaders within that IC. And frankly, how many people in the White House were involved, how many people in the White House were actually controlling Spygate. Sure. And the greatest scandal in this country's political history. I mean, this is a nonsensical, as you put it, this is nonsensical that Ghislaine Maxwell is more damn important than getting to the root of a massive political corruption in the federal government? My God, man, this is outrageous on every level.
Yeah, listen, I talk to people all across the country who are scratching their heads wondering what's going on. I do believe that the Attorney General has made this a top priority. I've seen the actions of John Durham. I do see a lot of activity. He's been digging in. But remember, they still rely on the same bureaucracy that gave us these first cases. And I think there's a little bit of a rope-a-dope going on in the bureaucracy, and it's time for the leadership of the Justice Department to take control, set a deadline, and get it done.
Well, let's talk about the bureaucracy. The deep state extends, obviously, to the Supreme Court. These decisions today on making available to the DA of Manhattan, Cy Vance, a left-winger, in absolute coordination and orchestration with the radical Dems on Capitol Hill, can proceed with a subpoena of the accounting firm for the president and get his tax records. And the Supreme Court ruling at the same time, Congress cannot. I mean, who the hell do they think they're kidding? They're one and the same.
They are some head scratchers, right? I think the good news for the president.
But you've got
a
lot of head scratching going on, John.
I do. I'm losing my hair because of it.
I have a lot of agita. I am so sick of looking at this nonsense and people saying, well, you know, what the hell, we'll catch it next quarter or we'll do something maybe next year.
Yeah.
Who the hell is this Justice Department to say it takes this long to do a damn investigation? They have killed every investigation, killed every opportunity at getting to the truth, and we're damn fools to put up with it, in my judgment. Let's go on with the damn courts.
The frustration is legitimate. I understand it because I hear it from lots of people in many different corners. I just came back from the middle America, Wisconsin, where I heard a lot of this, which is, why does it take so long to get these issues resolved? Why can't you get the people's business done and move on and bring people to justice? Hasn't happened.
The judiciary, do you believe it's as corrupt as every other part of the Justice Department and the FBI?
Well, listen, I think all of our institutions that used to be apolitical have shown increasing signs of politics, whether it's Pete Strzok's emails, Judge Emmett Sullivan's rope-a-dope and not dismissing the case against Flynn. You're seeing institutions that used to be apolitical now dripping with politics, and that's bad for the future of America's democracy. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. You know, we've seen a lot of people in the streets here lately. I'm thinking it's starting to look like all Americans are going to have to get in the street to get to be taken seriously. It's really asinine to see what we are witnessing with the left-wing media trying to control speech and thought, the left in this country trying to dismember this great nation of ours, and people sitting around going, well, what the hell? You know, maybe we'll figure it out in time. It's time now, I believe, John.
The American people have the ultimate weapon. When they go to that ballot box in November, or when they mail in their ballot in September, they have a chance to take back their country, and I think that is what this election's about. It's a choice about the America that we've come to love and enjoy and prosper in, and an America that will be run by anarchists, and I think that that's what's at stake in this election.
Yeah. An anarchist, might as well be anarchist, all the people wanting vote by mail instead of following an election filled with both safeguards and integrity. John Solomon, as always, good to talk with you. I feel all better.
John Solomon is a really stand-up person, and so is Lou Dobbs. Both of those people are rock solid, and both are frustrated, and there's a lot of people out here that are frustrated. And I just believe that the Attorney General, Barr, and a lot of others are going to protect, in the end, the deep state. They could have had indictments a year ago on these main players. They had more than enough evidence to indict Comey and others. They didn't do it because they believe that it could destroy and bring down the FBI and the Justice Department, Department of Justice, would both suffer in some way. And the people would just raise holy hell when they were presented with people that were indicted that were convicted of really treasonous activity. And that's really what Lou Dobbs was saying just a few minutes ago on this interview with John Solomon. Solomon and Sarah Carter, John Solomon, Greg Jarrett, and others, many others, have been laboring a long time, Devin Nunes, and those, to save the country and to right the wrongs of this spy operation that Hillary possibly and others. And but there's enough proof out there, but I'm not stating specifically it was Hillary, but she was involved in some way. Obama was involved in some way. All those people, Comey and them, there's actually evidence on them of wrongdoing. See? Perjury at the minimum. Process crimes at the minimum. And then they go out here with these courts that were trying to get to Roger Stone, and they trapped him. He should have never talked to the FBI. But he did, should have never made any statements, period. And, but he did. And they trapped him and framed him up in court. There are people that saying Steve Bannon, testified improperly, in court that, gave the jury a misimpression about Roger being in direct, contact with WikiLeaks, say, with Assange in that group. And I think there's additional proof that he was not. And then their on Roger Stone's trial, their jury foreman was biased, and the judge just ignored that and ruled against Roger Stone. It goes on and on. It's a deep state. See, these people have fathers that maybe, you know, worked for the Inglewood Arsenal. You know what I mean? The Inglewood Arsenal was a research facility. And some of these deep state players that we're seeing involved in Roger Stone and other trials, their relatives worked there at the Inglewood Arsenal. And the Inglewood Arsenal was a deep research facility that experimented on our army troops and so forth, our military. And they didn't tell them what they were experimenting with them. They gave them LSD and a lot of other very exotic things. And so years later, a class action suit would be filed against the federal government by those collective servicemen that had suffered under those research, operations and that were harmed. Many got cancer and died from all kinds of different diseases because of the experimentation that was on them. The Tuscany thing on the blacks down there in the South, too, was the same way they gave them syphilis and didn't tell them. Now, that's our government doing that. Now, up here at Inglewood Arsenal, they're experimenting on with the army troops and not telling them what they're doing. This was in the 50s in the Inglewood Arsenal. And it'd be interesting if some people could look into that and just see all the doctors and sort of delve into that to come up with some really names of some of the doctors that were involved in there. You might really be able to tie those to some of these judges running around in these federal courts and stuff. But that's the problem. Like father, like daughter, see, they're in a system of deep state here, and there's power there, and they just continue to corrupt, very corrupt people. They're all making millions out of this. And screwing the American public, see. And we're just sitting here going, no, what's wrong with America? Then we've got these Marxist communists, Omar and all them, and AOC running around wanting to burn down the country. See what I mean? And the very system that was set up by the founding fathers, those founding principles is what helped reform many of these shortcomings and problems that this country had. I want to thank everybody for listening. Good night, and God bless each and every one of you. So keep the faith. Thank you, and good night.